Great, thank you. My name is Shira Shavit. It's really hard to say. Nobody says it right. So thank you so much. We're really excited to be here today and present this data, Allison. That was amazing. And I actually, Allison said, it's really about kind of housing and food and employment and other supportive services, along with people who really care about this population. So basically, she summed up my talk. I think I can go. That's really what we do and what we're about. And what I want to do is actually take some time. We did a needs assessment, which we're going to present the data to today, which is interesting, but I think it's really more interesting if you understand the context of why we're doing this work. So I want to take some time to talk about our work and our program and kind of how this data fits in. Just a little background. I'm not going to belabor this because I saw the hands that went up. It seems like you all know a lot of this. We have a lot of people returning from prison back to the community. The discharge planning is critical, and then the kind of handoff to the community is also critical because we know that these individuals have very high rates of chronic conditions, mental health issues and substance abuse issues. And for many of them, they're diagnosed for the first time during incarceration. So accessing service in the community is not so simple. They don't know how to go to the pharmacy or to make a follow-up appointment or how to get refills or really what to do. So it's important to recognize that when you think about the population, and that when they're coming from prison, they're often isolated. Particularly in large states like California, we have 33 prisons around the state, many in the Central Valley. They're just so far from where they're returning home to. So to connect to services is very challenging. They don't get much discharge planning, and unless they're in the New York City jails or some of these other programs that she mentioned, given a limited supply of medication most of the time, and really, even if they are connected, oftentimes the services are just not available in the community. And we know that most of these people don't have insurance, so it's very difficult for them to continue the care they may have gotten while they were inside. And so they're obviously more likely to use the emergency department, and we see very high rates of use in the emergency room for their health care. So that's just kind of the basic overview. I wanted to take a second, though, just to look at this. This is California, obviously, and the reason why this slide is important, this actually comes from a study that was done by the RAND Corporation in 2009, sort of understanding reentry in our state. And the areas that are the darkest blue show the most prisoners returning to those communities. So the darkest blue areas are where we see more prisoners returning. So prisoners don't come back to all communities equally. They really come back to targeted communities, and within those communities to targeted neighborhoods. So when you're thinking about providing care to people returning for prisoners, people returning from prison, you really want to focus in on some key places, some key neighborhoods when you're thinking about it. And so I just want us to kind of keep this in mind sort of as we're moving forward and talking about the work that we're doing. So I'm going to take a few minutes to describe our program, which is the Transitions Clinic program. This was actually started here in San Francisco, and it is a program for people who are returning from prison. So we really want to focus, what we wanted to do is focus in on providing specific care for these individuals, care that's patient-centered, that's tailored for people returning who have chronic conditions. And we wanted to do that immediately upon release within the first 2 weeks from prison. And so some of the core components of this program, and just to take a step back, the way we developed the program is we work with the community. We sat down and had focus groups, talked to people who had been formerly incarcerated to hear what their needs were. And from that, we realized that it was really important to have somebody central in the program, in the clinic, who was from the community, who had experienced incarceration themselves, who could understand what the client was experiencing and then help them navigate the system and help them with basic case management. So there's that case manager that Allison talked about, somebody who understands and really cares, the right people to do the job to help people when they return from prison. We also needed a group of providers that had some cultural competency, whether it's experience working inside the prison system or in the community with this population, or some sort of specific training to work with the clients when they get out. And then lastly, important to have partnerships with existing community organizations that can provide the services that the clients need that go beyond the healthcare, as Allison mentioned. So this is actually a picture of our two community health workers, Ron Sanders and Juanita Alvarado, who are in the back. Can you guys raise your hand? They didn't know I was going to embarrass them. They're there back there. They're fabulous. And then Jerry Smart, could you raise your hand? He's a community health worker from New Haven, Connecticut. So these are the people that Allison's talking about who are really on the ground doing the work. And so at our program, you know, it is a primary care program. It provides medical services for people coming out, but we really have kind of a more holistic view, thinking about other things besides their medical needs. So we do, though, in the medical realm, provide transitional care, ongoing primary care, and then at our clinic in San Francisco, we do have some on-site services as well. And then most importantly, linkages to other community resources, and the community health workers are the ones who do that, and they help patients with their other needs with substance abuse treatment, mental health, housing referrals, et cetera. So the community health worker is really central in this program. They not only provide outreach, bringing the patients into the clinic, but they help them navigate the medical system, provide the referrals, as I mentioned, really that emotional support. Their cell phones are ringing off the hook. Because the clients are calling them saying, you know, I'm having a really hard day today, or I'm really struggling, you know, I just want to give up, and it'd be easier to just go back to prison. So that's what they're there for, to kind of support the patients, to provide health education and chronic disease self-management. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but this is really kind of that piece of making the patients feel comfortable. This is a lot about the community health worker and the staff that really understand where the patient's coming from. So not judging the clients, making them feel like they're a human being and really supporting them. And then lastly, really kind of this piece, really bridging back to the prison. So what Allison's doing is incredible, but it actually needs to go both ways, and the community needs to step up and connect with the prison. So part of our work is actually connecting with the prison system and trying to begin the outreach inside and be there immediately for people upon release. So we actually did a study in our clinic here in San Francisco as a randomized controlled trial, and I'm going to share just a little bit of the results of that for you. Majority of our patients are African-American, male, and poor. The majority of them have at least two chronic medical conditions, and 40% of them were diagnosed for the first time with a chronic disease while inside, and 67% of them used the emergency room as their regular source of care prior to incarceration. So this is kind of a really key point. They're not connecting to primary care and really need to be brought in. And my slide, there we go. 68% of them here in California had medications upon release, but only 20% had any sort of scheduled follow-up. And then interestingly, 14% had already gone to the emergency department before their two-week visit with us. So that really, again, makes us realize that it's so important to outreach to the prison, that to make that connection early, because 14% of them, even though they were seen within 2 weeks, still went to the emergency department. So we did look at some outcomes of healthcare utilization and kind of just want to highlight. With our program, what we did is we randomized the patients. We looked at 200 patients who had all come to our clinic once, and then they were either randomized to go on to regular care at other safety net clinics in San Francisco or to stay with us at the Transitions Clinic. And what we found is that the patients who stayed with us were much less likely, 15% less likely to use the emergency department. And that actually, the highest use in all groups were right when they got out of prison, and then really for the group that came to Transitions Clinic kind of trailed off over the course of the study. So what we know about this program is that it works. Having the right people who care, catching people when they get out, making sure that you have the services that they need is successful in pulling them into primary care and reducing emergency room utilization. So what does it mean? Sort of what's the significance of all that? How can we take this information and translate it into the big picture of what's happening in our country today? And so what we know is we're kind of on the verge of the Affordable Care Act. This is a patient population that many times does not have access to health care, does not have Medicaid, and with the Affordable Care Act will have Medicaid. So how do we use this opportunity to best serve this population? And so taking our program, we created what's called the Transitions Clinic Network, which is a network of clinics around the country that are dedicated to implementing the core elements of this model. A formerly incarcerated community health worker, an experienced provider, and connections to services in the community as well as to the prison where people are coming from. And so with our network, we actually were able to receive a grant from CMS to take this model nationally and create 11 sites in 6 states, including Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. And so over the next 3 years, the next 3 years, we plan to serve over 5,000 individuals returning from prison, and we want to improve their health, healthcare utilization, and reduce costs for this population moving forward. But when we started this project, it's also really important to have a better understanding of who these clinics are. And the reason I showed you that slide of California and all the different communities is that we didn't pick these sites by accident. We picked places that we targeted knowing that prisoners are returning to these communities. But what we also learned about that RAND study is that oftentimes the same communities that people are returning to are resource poor. And so these are the communities that struggle to provide care for those individuals. So we wanted to survey these clinics to get a better sense of what some of their strengths and weaknesses were so that we could have a better sense moving forward. And so this is just, I'm going to present some data that comes from the 11 clinics, and it's really just a survey format. And we thought it was interesting, and we wanted to share with you a little bit about those results. So kind of the domains that we looked at were healthcare access, cultural competency, community health worker training and integration into the clinical site, and then CQI, continuous quality improvement. Because these we believe these are key elements for these clinics to be successful as we move forward, not just with this program, but with the idea of maybe having this in other clinics moving forward. And again, these are primary care clinics that exist already that are serving this population, and so it's this idea of creating a special program to even more address individuals' needs. So when we look at early and open access to healthcare, as I mentioned, our goal is to see patients within 2 weeks, and we found that all of the clinics are able to do that. But despite being able to do that, some of the barriers they faced was insurance, and that some of the clinics, you had to have active insurance before you were seen. Here in San Francisco, that's not the case, but some of the sites it was, and some of the sites don't actively assist in patients applying for some type of coverage. And that also access to the clinics or to information about the clinics was also limited, that only half of the clinics had after-hour phone access. So just because the clinic can make an appointment doesn't mean that the individual can. So sort of trying to look at some of the barriers people may face. As far as medical services, these are existing primary care clinics, and many of them are federally qualified health centers, so they do have pretty broad range of primary care services, but the areas that you see here, like behavioral health, podiatry, dental, these are all common things we face in the community are difficult to access for patients. For behavioral health services, almost all the clinics had some sort of on-site mental health services, but again, just some sort, and I'm not going to get into the details of what that is in the interest of time, but about a quarter of them arranged services prior to release, and about a quarter said that people had to wait more than a month to get into services. And then for addiction services, two-thirds of the clinic had some sort of on-site addiction services, and so that they could provide those within a month for the clients. For social service access, most of the clinics relied on outside organizations for support in this arena. The number one service you might see on site at the clinics, though, were for supporting applications for disabilities, and the most difficult access are things like housing, employment, food stamps, and tattoo removal. And interestingly, a lot of these issues have actual laws or policies that are sort of make it even more difficult for people coming out of prison, like with food stamps. In some states, there's a partial, a full food stamp ban for people who have felony drug convictions. As far as cultural competency, only four of the clinics had community advisory boards, and only one of them had a representation of formerly incarcerated individuals. As far as the clinician competency, many had experience working with former prisoners, but really not formal training. And as far as the community health worker, very few actually employed a community health worker who had a personal history of incarceration. As far as supporting the community health workers, many of the sites actually had community health workers, but they weren't really dedicated to working with this population. And there were a lot of pieces of supporting community health workers that were missing, like forums to mitigate burnout. There might be some professional development, but not necessarily across the board, and maybe not formal training for the community health workers, and then often facing barriers for hiring people who are formerly incarcerated as community health workers in the clinic. And then for the continuous quality improvement capacity, so the clinics often will collect some data, but many people cited that time is a real issue, personnel, and then also the capacity to apply what they found from the data. So really needing some support in this arena, not having good connections to the hospital or emergency room to know when the patient shows up there to be able to follow or track them, not really any good formal relationships with the jail or Department of Corrections to get data from them as well, and very few had any sort of way to track the outside referrals to social services. So kind of in conclusion, these are sort of the arenas that the clinics struggled with. So having improved insurance, the access to the insurance post-release, relationships with the jails, kind of what Allison talked about, this is really important to have that handoff between if there is a discharge planning program or even if there isn't, to be able to connect back, timely access to mental health services, a more robust training as far as cultural competency, and then more support for the community health workers. And kind of very importantly, you know, to have the right person for the job, you need to be able to employ the right person. So really being able to employ people who have a history of incarceration, and that barrier is a real important one we're going to face as we move forward. And then also really providing more tools and support for clinics who want to collect data, use that data in the development of their program. So this is kind of what we found. This is, I know it's just a taste, and it's really only at 11 sites. This is a conversation that we're going to be having kind of moving forward as we do this project and sort of roll out the program at 11 sites across the country. But we're really excited because these are the arenas that we're also going to get more data about and really study closely, looking at what are the key factors that are really necessary to make this type of program really accessible to all primary care medical homes under the Affordable Care Act moving forward. So, and thank you to all of our funders. I don't think I have time to mention all of them. So do I have time for questions, or are we going to do it afterwards?
Maybe one
question. Great. Okay, the question was, we did focus groups with formerly incarcerated individuals. How did we do outreach? And actually, Donna Wilmot was involved in that. Do you want to answer that question, Donna? She's here in the audience. Great, thank you.